Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, I'm so delighted to introduce you to one of my personal mentors and one of the pioneers in our field of aesthetics. She is world-renowned dermatologist Dr. Doris Day. Welcome, Doris.
Thank you, and thank you for that awesome introduction. I'm beaming. I'm smiling from ear to ear.
Doris and I had the pleasure of hanging out at the Miami Cosmetic Surgery Conference this past weekend, and we had so much fun on a really windy rooftop party.
Yes, and we did poke fun too.
That's right. We thought maybe we went to the wrong party because there was no food and we were in blankets and there was just like no heat lamps either in Miami of all things. So it was fun to sit with you and chat, and I think what I've learned in this profession is we all grow together, and it's so awesome to talk to you and make a friendship with you when you've done so much in this industry and you give me such great tips and advice, life advice too. So thank
and
you
I learned
for
so much
that.
From you as well. I love watching and following your posts. They're so informative, and you find a way to make it what we call medutainment, where it's informative and interesting, but also just really fun to watch.
That's important. I think that somehow this generation has morphed to the point where I don't think book learning is going to be the way that we learn in the future. I don't know about you. You have children. I have children. I feel like my littlest kid has not picked up a book in the longest time, which is a horrible thing, but it's the truth.
Yeah, I hope we get back to it, though. I think we'll find that balance. My kids are, I'm lucky in that my children were before real computers were out there and cell phones. So they kind of grew up with books. My daughter's first favorite book was like a squeaky toy book as a child. And then she sort of evolved into real books. And we still like to read. But you know what? Now we read on our phones. So
that's
not
so true.
I mean, we'll find ways through it. But aesthetics really has had an opportunity to grow and evolve through our social media platforms and through our phones. And I think that's one of the areas that you and I talk a lot about, in that how that's evolving. And sometimes it goes to the extreme, but I think the pendulum is starting to swing back a bit, which is comforting.
Yeah, I think we have a real vehicle for educating the public because, you know, people just go out there and ask for Botox, they ask for fillers, but they don't realize it's a real medical commodity. It's not something that just should be bought on a street corner because it's a cheap Groupon price. And I think, you know, your work is very informative. You've written a couple of books. So you're the author of two books, Forget the Facelift. I love that title. And 100
yeah,
Questions. It is 100 Questions and Answers About Acne. So why Forget the Facelift?
And my new third book. I have my new book is Beyond Beautiful. So I've progressed since there. But Forget the Facelift was really I like the title because, you know, I send patients out for plastic surgery every day, or, you know, just for consultations. I don't do surgery in my office. I do surgery for skin cancers and things, but not aesthetic surgery. So my equivalent of surgical tools would be my neuromodulators, fillers, lasers, devices. I have over 30 different devices in my office, but it's really, that book was really meant to be my philosophy for beautiful skin and my four-step approach. It's what you do on the outside, what you do on the inside, great diet, proper hydration, and sunscreen. Sunscreen is one of the most important things, but lifestyle has a huge impact, and only about 10% of how your skin ages is based on your genetics. That may not be true for your brain and other organs, but we have a lot of control over how our skin ages. And unfortunately, we spent 90 out of our $100, let's say that, you know, all the money is 100, and we'll put $90 into all of these things to you know, products, devices, treatments, and only $10 into our sun protection and preventative measures. So my hope is that if people can understand that what you have control over, your lifestyle choices, can have a powerful impact on your skin, and really simple things that you can do. They don't have to be expensive. They don't have to be time consuming. They just have to be smart. And there are lots of things that you can do. And the first thing is really protect your skin from excess sun exposure, which where you are on the West Coast is kind of hard, but can be done. On the East Coast, it's challenging because people from here go to Florida, they go to the West Coast, they go on vacation, and they think, well, if I'm not in the sun all the time, I can go sometimes and it won't matter. And the reality is you can get a whole year's worth of sun exposure in your 1 week vacation.
Really? That's very interesting. Yeah, 90% of aging is sun damage and ultraviolet light. People don't realize.
And lifestyle.
90.
Yeah, and lifestyle.
Yeah. That's yep, so
that
huge.
High. It's 80 to 90%, but it's as high as 90.
So lifestyle wise, it's eating complex carbohydrates and sugars that causes glycolation and damage to skin. Is that right?
Absolutely. All of those processed foods, those simple sugars, all of those things will do exactly as you said, increase inflammation, cause glycation, and accelerate the aging process. And you know what? If it's happening in your skin, you can be sure it's happening in your other organs as well. And what's great about the skin is it's such a powerful reflection of your overall health and well-being. So when I see beautiful skin, I know that the skin is healthy. You really can't fake it. Having beautiful skin is not the same as makeup or a filter. It's actually in real time. It's a beautiful reflection. And I've been thinking about this a lot. And I think one of the things that makes us look younger when we're older, or beautiful when we're older, even if we don't look younger, it's skin quality. And we can do a lot with fillers and neuromodulators, even devices, but restoring that skin quality, that skin thickness, that plumpness is really quite difficult. And we can only go so far. We can't go to the point of undoing all the damage or making it as if it never happened. We can improve it. And that's because as we age, we also lose hormones and other elements. So we're losing the ability to restore and replace collagen. So no matter how much we put into it, we're just not making collagen in the same way. And so we're going to be limited as we age. So the more you can preserve and protect and enhance when you're younger, and you have a greater ability for that repair process, the better you're going to look when you're older. And that's how I came up with my line, that nothing looks more beautiful in your 50s and up than sun protection or being sun smart when you're in your 20s, because it takes that long to show.
That is so true. Are there any anti-aging regenerative things coming out this year that you think are going to really transform our industry, such as skin boosters, biostimulators, or any secrets that you know of?
I think we know the same secrets, and you're hinting at them so beautifully. I think skin boosters will be very exciting, and it's all going to come down to cost, because they're boosting, improving hydration, and helping the skin look more beautiful. But if they're very costly and we're trying to add that into all the other treatments we do, we have to see if the value is really there. The word that we're hearing from Europe and countries that already have these products is that they're really happy with them. So my hope and expectation is we'll be excited about them. I think also there's some things coming. I call it a fractional facelift, but I think the technical term might be micro coring, where there's a new process where you take out very, very tiny, like 1 millimeter smidgets of skin in areas around the jawline and the neck. And then you have bridges of normal skin between the little cores of skin, like you take, think of an apple core, but super tiny. And by taking out 50 to 100 to a few hundred of those micro cores of full thickness skin, the normal skin between that will sort of graft together and cause contraction and the effect of a lift, because and with little to no downtime and very little scarring. But we have to see if that really pans out. But that's work that's been going on for a few years that I think may be kind of exciting for people who really don't want surgery, who don't have that much laxity and want a little bit of tightening. Because we know now that what happens when we age is that the skeleton shrinks a little bit in very specific ways, and the soft tissue, which is the skin and all those other elements above the bone, sort of expand. So you have this disconnect between part of you shrinking, the wrong part, and part of you expanding, the wrong part. And that's how we kind of sink, sag, and wrinkle. And with that micro coring, we may be able to sort of bring things back to better balance without surgery. But I'm still waiting for the data, but I'm excited about the trends. And then plasma, which is different, not plasma as in the blood injections, but plasma as in a device using plasma energy to resurface. I did it 20 years ago when I opened my practice. We didn't have very much in the way of lasers. We were more limited. And that technique came out, but could have a bit of downtime and had some risk of scarring, but that's making a resurgence. I was hearing about it from Europe, and now it's kind of coming over here. I'm waiting to see if those are really new devices or if it's just kind of recirculating old technology. And whether or not that's real. I don't know. Are you using plasma there, the plasma pen, or any of those plasma devices?
No, not really. For those people who haven't heard of it, the plasma pen is sort of a mildly ablative electrocautery device that destroys a pattern of skin so that there's some normal skin left in between. But I've seen some horror stories, and I definitely think hyperpigmentation could be a problem. So I'm a little hesitant.
And scarring. It's really just like lighting fire to the skin. And it you have really to hope is. That you control the depth and you get the response you want. And unfortunately, I'm seeing this a lot in medispas as something that's super safe and easy to do, when in reality, it's neither, in my view. I'm waiting again to see the technology really get approved here. So I always leave my mind open. I'm always a skeptic, but I have an open mind. And my goal is always safety first and then efficacy. And I need both, but I need to start with safety, then I need efficacy. And I like to learn from other people's mistakes rather than my own. So I wait to see how people are using it and the results they're getting. And if I see it's really all that. Like when threads first came to the States, everybody was talking about it. And this is, we're talking 15, 16 years ago. And I was really excited. They had these barbed threads that you put in, and it was supposed to be this non-surgical facelift. And it was being touted all over the place. I went to a meeting to see it being done, to see if I wanted to do it. And it looked awful. I mean, it looked
horrific,
right? Scary, horrific.
Unsterile. And so it looks completely unsterile the way they do it, mostly.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't do it. But those threads were made of things like copper and all sorts of metals. It was a very strange thing. And you couldn't take them out once they were in. And it would scrunch all the skin up in the scalp. So you'd have this bunching of skin, extra pull, then it would relax, and then it would go away. And some people had infections. They couldn't take these barbed threads out, whatever they were made of. And now it's evolved to where it's better than it was. And some people are getting good results, but there's still some issues with complications. So, and now we have a whole variety of them, and they're made of things that are more absorbable. So I think that's something that I do a little bit of, with the smooth and the twisted versions of them, not the barbed ones. And for areas that, like the upper lip area or the brows, where I want to create some lift, and if it's done carefully and in combinations with other things, always in a sterile circumstance, right? So you have to be very careful to make sure you have proper cleansing of the skin and proper technique. I've seen good results with some of it, but I'm cautiously optimistic that we're getting better with that technology. And again, I waited to see other people's outcomes and the data. And there's very select cases where you want to improve and give the skin some structure without creating more volume. And I think that there's a role in combination with other things, because, you know, we know that we're aging in more than one dimension. It's multifactorial. So I like the idea that we have lots of tools available, and the more that we use those tools, and when we have data about them, the better we get at using them, and the more we can evolve. And I think that's happened with our fillers and neuromodulators as well. In the beginning, we would just do one thing and chase the lines and wrinkles. And now we're learning we can contour, we can balance, we can enhance, and really help someone look just like themselves, only better, without looking done. But we've had to evolve to get there. Same products, we're just better at it. And I think with these other things, we can get there.
I loved your talk on stage in Miami, because you said that line of, you know, we used to just go for making people frozen, and now we go for finesse, which is so true. Like, it's, to me, it's not about stopping every wrinkle and filling every line anymore. It really isn't. It's about just a global, optimization of beauty and making sure people look natural and like themselves. And I think that we are the people that have to mandate that in our specialty.
Absolutely. Which is why I love that you have such a powerful voice, that you have such a great following, because it is about mandating that and having us be the go-to influencers, key opinion leaders, not just amongst our peers, but for the public. And to have that presence and have people know that they're going to ask you and me and people like your sister, who are so highly respected, for their opinion, and know that it's based on fact and science and actual training, is really very comforting. And, you know, I feel when we talk about the frozen look, people are so conditioned to think about lines and wrinkles as a sign of aging. But I don't think that lines or wrinkles make people look old. I do think having a heavy, flat brow will make a woman look old, but a few lines in her forehead won't. And that's, it's so really true. Having that conversation with somebody saying that, look, your forehead can move, when you raise it, you're going to have a crease. We can soften it without taking away the movement entirely. But if we try to take away the movement entirely and your brow drops and your eyelid looks heavier, because by inactivating that muscle, the frontalis, the forehead muscle, and preventing it from lifting is going to create that effect of dropping the brow, then that is going to make you look older and actually feel tired. So it's not even just how you look, but also that affects how you feel. So it's those conversations are so important.
I think our industry has to push the press also to evolve in the same way that the makeup industry has pushed by consumer dollars this drive to show skin of all colors needs makeup of all colors. We need to show that women of all ages need to be represented in magazines and in ads at all ages. Like, it can't just be youth and beauty as Bella Hadid and that's it. It's got to be that there's beauty at every age and that those women are represented in fashion and magazine ads and in, you know, all these things that are images blasted to our brains.
I love that. And I like the idea of showing women in all professions. Actually, you saying that just reminded me, I saw in the news that they're considering starting a show like The Bachelor, but for seniors, for people like, I think by seniors, I don't know how old, I'm saying over 50, which I am. So I better be careful about calling things seniors, but.
Here's but a better word starting for that. We have to come up with it.
Exactly. I know we have to come up with something better. Wiser people who are more experienced in life.
The finessed crowd.
Yes, the crowd that really gets it.
Yes, exactly. That would be a fun show to watch, actually.
Exactly.
There's such
that's coming.
There's a big difference, I think, between East Coast and West Coast versions of beauty. What's your take on that? Because I feel like East Coast New York beauty is very subtle, very refined. Like, you really have to look for the changes. And I think that's so interesting because on the West Coast, it's very different.
You know, I'm so happy you said that instead of me saying that, because it may come out wrong from an East Coast person to say, yeah, you know, when we go to the West Coast, we kind of notice that they kind of go big and they go early. So when I look at my relatives who are on the West Coast, whenever we have events and we cross from one coast to the other, we visit each other, I find that in their 20s, they've already had, you know, breast augmentations, nose jobs, and even by their 30s, they're already starting to have facelifts. That's just my impression of as an East Coaster who only hops over to the West Coast once in a while.
Yeah, that's true.
And it seems like it's just everyone's outdoors more maybe and they see each other more, but it's just the trend is more to do more at a younger age and to see beauty as a trend and as an option that you have these things that you can change it. If you don't like it, you can change it again. On the East Coast, I don't think of it as being quite that way. We definitely, you know, we all complain that we see people walking up and down Madison and Fifth Avenues looking overdone and having had too much done. But people are saying that in the sense that they're saying they don't want it. And I think we lag a little bit behind the West Coast in terms of procedures that we do, but they do get here and we do start to do those. So we have to be careful to rein that in. There's a lot of aesthetic providers here between plastic surgeons of all types, facial plastic, oculoplastic, plastic surgeons, and medi spas that are opening pretty much on every corner. And I think it's going to be a problem. I'm hoping that we won't catch up entirely to the West Coast, but it's starting to pick up a little bit here. And I find that a little bit concerning. I'm hoping we can hold it back.
Well, some of our West Coast beauty is just unrecognized. You only see the glaring bad examples, which are like obvious when you're walking down the street, but the really well-maintained beauties you don't see. Like where I live in Pasadena, we have, you know, sort of this crowd of like women that are just beautifully refined and they look like normal moms, but they've really held it together. Like they're taking good care of their appearance. And then we also have the Beverly Hills ladies, but you know, it's all stereotypes, but it is also partly true.
But, you know, it's the same here. I have to say that's true. And I didn't mean that in any disparaging way to anybody in California or on the West Coast. It's true. We do tend to stereotype and exaggerate. And we can certainly say the same thing.
Something we have to change the image of too, because like even in our own heads, when we hear like, oh, it's a girl who got lip filler, your mind immediately goes to that figure of like huge lips. Whereas, right. Because that's what we're conditioned to think of lip filler as, oh, big lips. But somehow that's going to change with, I guess, refinement of our specialty and different images coming out there. so that it's not perceptible.
And that is the truth. I think for the vast majority of people who are treated well, it's not perceptible. And so we don't even notice. Like we can't even comment. We're always going to comment on that exception that's overdone it. And that's just the nature of how it goes. When patients say that, oh, you know, with neuromodulators or something, I was someplace today and someone said, oh yeah, Botox, people look frozen. And I said, well, I've been doing it to me for 20 years and I can still move my face entirely. And they're mm-hmm. like, oh, really? That's surprising. So yes. It's just, you don't know when you can't tell, and no one's going to walk around announcing it like, yes, I've had all these treatments done, unless right. you're the doctor doing it, right? Mm-hmm. So to yourself, or having it done, I don't interject myself, but it's one of those things where you're absolutely right. The people who look beautiful and natural and who age well, you can't tell. But now I'm starting to think that when you look at someone in their 70s, right, who look great, you kind of can tell that they've done something because they look great, but you can't tell what they've done. Mm-hmm. So as we get older, when you see people who look really good, the assumption is they've done something to look that good.
Right. It's interesting because this generation of women is going to age so differently and so much better. Like the ones that are doing appropriate treatments and who are doing good work, they're going to look good till they're 90. Imagine.
I know. I see my mom at 87 and she looks, I just saw her this morning. She lives in my building. So we stopped by for breakfast on before I went to work. And I was just looking at her thinking, God, she looks so good. But she's also in the gym right now working out. Yeah. So she's taking great care of herself, eating well, sleeping well. And I think part of that is that when I think about beauty, and that's really the concept of my newer book, Beyond Beautiful, and I called it Beyond Beautiful because what I recognized over 20 years of practice is that appearance has value. It communicates something about you. And my hope is that when we do these aesthetic treatments, we're not just making our patients look better. We're actually helping our patients live better lives and feel more confident and all those things that go with what we hope for from beauty. And that's the most powerful thing, right? That improves gratitude. That improves accomplishment. That improves confidence to go out and try for a job or meet somebody or do mm-hmm. something that you didn't dare do before because you didn't feel that good about yourself. So by making that connection, and that's why we're physicians, right? We want to help our patients make those connections to also eat better, sleep better, and live overall better lives. And then they really appreciate and enjoy their beauty. Appearance is not just a gratuitous thing. It's not just like, you know, a random organ. You can't live without your skin. Your skin communicates something about you. You have control over what that communicates. We want to help you be most effective in how you do that. Not just come in and fill something up or freeze something over and then say, okay, go on, get on with your life. And that's why our conversations with our patients, understanding why they come in, is so powerful and so important.
I totally agree. I think that the stigma about getting things done needs to end. And I think you can definitely be a person of character and care about how you look. And you actually should be. Like it's almost like a clinical problem when you lose interest in how you look. And you're losing your self-esteem. It's almost one of those signs of depression is you don't care anymore. So I think that the more we do to maintain, like there's no way we can live in these vehicles without a little bit of maintenance. If you're going to live an 80-year, 90-year life, you have to put maintenance into this vehicle that carries our self-identity. So I fully agree with you. And I hope that together we can help erase those stigmas so people see that, you know, women of character and men and people who want to do good things in life still need to look good and feel good.
Yeah, so, I think we're on that path. I love it.
Yeah. What is your skincare routine and are there any favorite skincare ingredients that you love, must have?
Well, my skincare routine is always changing because I'm always testing products. And if you look at my desk in the office and even my little dresser counter here, I have so much stuff on my counter and I'm always layering things and trying and smelling and looking at formulas. I used to work in a research lab and I've helped develop skincare lines. So I'm really, really into ingredients and formulas and the science behind it. And one of the things that I find complicating is that everybody likes the idea of natural, but I don't think that that has any real meaning in dermatology yet, like it does in food or organic. But people are looking for things in terms of what natural implies, which means safer, non-toxic, And there's a lot of misinformation out there about skincare ingredients, but there are basic ingredients that I think that we should be looking for and using. So sunscreen, sun protection, we talked about. I like mineral-based sunscreens. I like erythritol, actinica, which you can get from your dermatologist or plastic surgeon, or over-the-counter La Roche-Posay, the pure mineral SPF 60 is really, really nice. Then there is, in terms of ingredients, retinol is vitamin A, which is, I think, still one of the most important. It's the most highly published, highly studied ingredients out there. And it's not an exfoliator. It helps normalize skin cell turnover and really helps build collagen production. So people worry that it's going to thin out the skin, but it doesn't. It actually thickens the skin. It makes the outer layer, which is the stratum corneum, the dead skin layer, sit more compact, which makes it look smoother and helps the light reflect off it more evenly. But it makes the deeper layers, the collagen layers, make better collagen, which is really important. And then I like growth factors. I love niacinamide, which is B3, vitamin B3. That's mm-hmm. super important. And I think as a supplement, that's a really great one to take as well. And then there's a new ingredient for women who are peri and postmenopausal called Emipel. That's the brand, but the ingredient in it is called MEP, M-E-P. And that ingredient helps restore estrogen receptors, but it's not a hormone and has no systemic hormonal effect. So the FDA has looked at the ingredient and asked for specific testing for them to make those claims, and they've done that. So we can say that it doesn't have any systemic hormonal effect, but it does help those estrogen receptors in the skin, which you need as you get older to help build collagen. And that's, you know, you look at women postmenopausal and you can lose 30% of your collagen in the first 5 years postmenopause. So
yeah, that's horrifying.
Horrifying. And then you add in sun damage to that and other stressors like, you know, the sugars and all the foods we've talked about, lack of sleep that comes with menopause. Sometimes people have sleep problems. For women who don't do hormone replacement or can't do it, then we want to have ingredients that are going to help preserve and enhance and rejuvenate those estrogen receptors and not worry about systemic estrogen effects. I personally think that hormone replacement for people who are good candidates for it is critical. And unfortunately, and I don't offer hormone replacement. I refer them out to endocrinologists or functional medicine doctors who know how to monitor and follow that. But it's just such an important thing for women to have that conversation as they approach perimenopause, because if it's affecting and you're losing collagen in your skin, again, your skin is not in isolation as an organ, right? It's also going to affect your brain, your heart, your other organs. And we know that, and the studies are showing more and more, and a recent study just came out that the closer to perimenopause or menopause that you start hormone replacement, the less cognitive decline, the less dementia that women get, the less heart disease, less osteoporosis. So I don't do that part of it, but I do recommend it for my patients. And then topically, ingredients like Emipel or that ingredient it has in it called MEP can help. And that's an ingredient that I only think is in that one product. Other things that I like are vitamin C, which I think helps brighten, and retinol, vitamin C, niacinamide. I like caffeine around the eyes. There's over-the-counter, there's some good ingredients. And the brands that I like are things like L'Oreal Revitalift. I love Olay Pro-X and Olay Regenerist. Number 7 is actually a great line that's come over here. I've done some PR stuff for all of these brands over the years. And so I get all the back data on their ingredients and their products. And they're all really incredibly well-made and very accessible. So I always say there's just no excuse to have bad skin now, because you don't always have to spend a lot of money. We carry higher end, better products in our office that may have some special ingredients, which is nice. But the ingredients that you can get in the drugstore, some of those brands are fantastic. And I like the bigger name brands over the small boutique ones, because I've been to the labs of all these companies and I see the PhDs doing the research, and their money goes into their research and development and not that much into the packaging. Mm-hmm. So I think that they're very efficient in making really great products, and they do incredible testing on these products.
They do. Yeah, there really is no excuse. Like, everyone at every price point can afford to have some form of good skincare. But yeah, just like
absolutely.
You said, the mainstays being the sunscreen, the vitamin C, the retin-A, definitely. Those are the desert island trio, I think, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Well, you're a mom, a wife, a physician, a published author, and a key opinion leader. How do you keep your balance? And what can you tell us as tips for success, because you're my role model.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you. The main thing I think is to compartmentalize and to be wherever you are fully. So when I'm here with you, I'm just here with you in this moment and I'm reveling in it. I love our conversation. I love to get this time to get to talk to you and to reach your listeners and tell them the things that we're excited and passionate about. When I was with my children growing up, I did my best to leave my office at the office. And when I'm in the office, I'm with every patient. I don't have phones in the rooms. I don't have distractions. So I think if you are just fully in that moment, when I travel, I always say I don't even get jet lag because I just go with the light. And wherever I am, I put my clock to that time zone and I just go with it. So it takes practice to do that. Mm-hmm. I also find that diversity of events helps refresh me. So when I was in the office and I would work and I would leave feeling euphoric because I love being in the office, but also a little bit drained, I come home and to hear my little ones call me mommy, it was like a whole new day. And then I have my quiet time when I read books. I read a ton of books. I love to read. And for me, sleep is really important. When I go to meetings or when I travel or even at home, I need my 7 to 8 hours a night sleep. So I'll miss dinners and I'll miss events and I don't go to many parties because I like my quiet time and having that downtime. I feel like, well, if I'm not at that party, it can't be that good. So, right. So I don't feel bad that I'm missing anything. I'm just happy to have my quiet time where I can reset my mind. And I do a lot of writing as well. So each thing makes each other thing new and different and interesting. And I think having that multi-varied kind of a day for me is very energizing, but you have to know yourself.
You do. And I think it's more important as I get a little older, I think taking the time to take care of my health, like a little bit of exercise, a little bit of sunlight every day, something to grow your mind, something to, you know, stretch your emotions. It's very important to just get out of your work all the time.
Well, I walk to and from work, which is about 2.5 miles each way. And that for me is very therapeutic. And I live on the 14th floor and I walk up the steps.
Wow.
And when I can, I go to the gym.
So
I
kind of, you go up 14 floors every day.
I do. And I build that. So I build it into my day. So if I don't get to the gym, at least I did something. And that feels really good.
That's so important. It's the little things. It's like you said, it's consistency. It's doing the small things for your skin every day. It's not just coming in to see your doctor twice a year for shots. It's doing like the little daily habits that make you a great, healthy person. So
absolutely.
Thank you so much, Doris, for tuning in with our listeners today. And I'm so excited to read your new book. It's called Beyond Beautiful. And if you guys listen to radio podcast, she's also on Doctor Radio on Sirius XM. And you can tune in and listen to her show bi-monthly. I am so happy to have talked to you today. And I can't wait to visit you in New York City. I got to come visit your office and come up 14 flights of steps to your house.
Absolutely. And do my radio show with me as well.
Yes, for sure. Where can my listeners find you on your various handles?
I'm at Dr. Doris Day, Dr. Doris Day on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And that's also my website. So I kept the name consistent to make it easy.
Perfect. And that's it for now, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in and interviewing really important beauty bosses, people in this industry who shape change and determine beauty philosophy and influence us in all aspects. Doris, it's great to chat with you. Can't wait to see you in Monaco at the next meeting.
Me too. So excited. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. And you can find me on my Instagram doing amazing things with people's faces at Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y. And the website is the same, beautybydrk.com. And someday I'll write a good book like Doris. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.